Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk football with the professor, John Clayton. We do it every day at this time with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. If you guys have questions for John, you know what to do. Text those questions into 710-710. Try to get to some of your questions before we let him go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
All right, John.
It's pretty bad.
It was bad. I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Dave and the listeners at the very beginning of the show. Now, we acknowledge everybody's complicit in this loss, but if we're slicing up the blame pie, who gets the biggest slice? Was it offense? Was it defense? Was it coaching? Was it officiate? Whatever you think it was, who gets the biggest slice?
It was defense. I mean, again, they gave up 33 points, and they gave up two touchdowns in the second half to allow the game to be tied. I mean, say what you want about the offense. No, they didn't run the ball very well. But Russell Wilson threw for 343 yards, but it was 531 yards or so that they allowed on defense, and that was the problem. And again, you can see a bunch of the problems on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, again, they didn't run the ball well, but how many bad down and distance situations do they get, either with a false start or a mistake here, a mistake there? That wasn't good. And I think also the protection was a little bit spotty, because here you had Damian Lewis playing with a groin injury and alternating with Jamarco Jones. And then, in the fourth quarter, Brandon Shell ends up hurting his ankle. So I think that held things down. And then all of a sudden you start seeing the sacks come in. The one thing that Russell Wilson didn't do, which he should have been able to do, is do better on third down. But again, I think of a lot of it was down in distance, because, you look at the Titans, they last year were the worst team in the league on third down conversions on defense. 51.7% they gave up. And then week one against Arizona, they gave up, they were the fifth worst in football. Where, you come in and the Seahawks were only able to do 4 of 12 on third down. That obviously has to improve, because this was a vulnerable team, and you can see it with the way that they played. I mean, look at the long passes that Tyler Lockett was able to get. Look at the Freddie Swain play. I mean, they were vulnerable. It's just that in the end, on third down, it just didn't work.
Boy, it sure didn't bother, you're talking about the offensive line problems and injuries. Sure didn't bother the Titans. Man, I mean, they come in here, no Taylor Lewan. Roger Saffold was in and out. He's probably their most reliable. I mean, he's in the third year of a $44 million contract there. And so they were able to get it done. How good would you say is this team in going out into the rest of their schedule? Is this a playoff team, you think?
Oh, I think so, yeah, because Indy, I don't think, is going to make it, because they're already 0-2. And now Carson Wentz has two injured ankles, and they have to go to Jacob Eason. So I think they're in major trouble when they have three more games coming up against teams that won 10 or more games last year. So they very well could be 1-4 by week 5, and that can put them out, particularly in the AFC. But I think it's a weird season. I mean, where I say it's a weird season is that think about the fact that home teams right now is 15-16. Okay. Now Green Bay will win tonight. That'll put them at 16-16. And then in one possession games, it's 15 out of 16 have been one possession game. So it's like you just shake your head and you go, whoa. I mean, 15 times I think there's been one possession games, and so it's crazy.
We're going to Vegas. John says it's a done deal. Why play the game? Green Bay's going to win. Let's just get to Vegas.
I guess I don't even need to go home and watch the game.
No, you don't. It's like, let's put it this way. It's Detroit. Do you want to watch it?
Well, not really, but I do want to see the Manning broadcast.
Yeah.
So I'm going home to watch. I'm going to tape that one. I missed that. Did you catch any of that? I can't remember.
I did not catch it, no.
It was pretty funny.
John, you should check it out.
A sliver of it. It was pretty funny.
ESPN2.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's your homework assignment, John. Okay. See what you think of the Manning brothers.
So, John.
I think they should get Cooper in there too.
I'd like to. I don't know that I've heard the guy talk, so
he's really
I'd be
funny.
Curious just to hear him with those two. That'd be fun. John, what? How much stock do we put into two games for anything? Whether a team's playing really good or really poorly or whatever, we joke around about, like, we're watching highlights of Jameis Winston right now, who was atrocious yesterday. And after the first week, I had people texting into me going, "Oh, Jameis, pretty good, huh, Bob? I guess you're wrong." And I'm like, it's one game. And I'm not going to say this is who he is moving forward either. He had the worst quarterback rating of his entire career yesterday. So how much stock do you put into two games, whether somebody's playing really well or really poorly?
This year, not enough. I mean, I don't think you can do it. I think you have to wait about a month to at least sort things out. Because think about the idea. Okay, I mean, going into the season, do we all agree that the AFC had a better chance to look better than the NFC? Because you have the older quarterbacks for the most part in the NFC. You've got all these bright young quarterbacks in the AFC and, you know, good young teams. And yet, if you look at the seven teams that are, you know, 2-0, five of them were in the NFC. And then you look at the interconference matchups, and right now the NFC is winning it. And it's like, I didn't expect that. But again, I think a lot of it's because you have the ups and downs of the fact that, you know, teams didn't play in the preseason. You have a bad week, you have a good week, all those different things. And then the injuries. I mean, the injuries are such a big factor. I mean, you know, you look at San Francisco, sure, they're 2-0, but it's getting worse and worse. I mean, they won 17-11 in Philadelphia, but, you know, they're down their top two running backs, Raheem Mostert and Jeff Williams. And then, you know, they have three other replacement running backs, and they all get hurt on Sunday. I mean, Hasty, who is, you know, starting to do well, he gets a high ankle sprain, so he's going to be out for some time. I don't know how bad Mitchell's hurt, but again, you know, like they were down to Trenton Cannon at the running back position. And so they only score 17 points.
Yeah. Hey, John, it looks like Derek Carr is on pace to throw for 7,000 yards this year. 17 games. He's got over 800. And surprising Raiders going into Pittsburgh. I mean, that was a good win.
Yeah, it was. And I gave them good grades for that win because, again, it was a very good win. And, you know, but now the question is going to be, is Derek Carr going to play this week? Because he suffered an ankle injury in the game. Nathan Peterman had to come on briefly to fill in for him. And right now, John Gruden says he's questionable. He says he thinks he's going to be able to play, but he's certainly not going to be as mobile with that injury. So, you know, that's got to be a little bit scary. But you know, right now, thanks to Derek Carr, and also thanks to Max Crosby, because Max Crosby has, you know, he's certainly not Chandler Jones. He's certainly not Aaron Donald, but he's one of the top three or four defensive players that start the season. Last week, he was defensive player of the week. He's a defensive end. He leads the league in pressures. He leads the league in hits on the quarterback. I mean, he's really doing a great job, and that's helped him out because think about what the Raiders have just done. They've gone out against two of the playoff teams in the AFC North, and they've won. And again, it was a little bit of a high-scoring game against Baltimore on that Monday night fun game to watch. And then they just went in and dominated Pittsburgh, you know, took away the offense for the Steelers. And so they're off to a good start. And all of a sudden, here's John Gruden, who's been rightfully criticized for 3 years with three losing teams, now off to a start where it's like, okay, he's 2-0 and looking better. And of course, you know, the schedule, what's interesting, if you start to look at the schedule for most teams, it starts to get a little bit tougher in week three and week four. And that's where I think there's going to be a sorting out process.
Boy, that was a great get. Max Crosby, you mentioned, John, from, what is it, Eastern Michigan or Central Michigan?
Right.
One of the Michigans.
Yeah, one of the Mish.
Yeah, and fourth round draft choice. So the guy had 10 sacks his rookie year and then seven last year. And then, as you mentioned, he's got two so far this year. That was a great find by the Raiders.
Yeah, and again, that's something that they have been short of is great finds in the draft because, you know, they took the fourth pick in the draft a couple years ago, and he's inactive. He doesn't even play. Then, you know, a lot of the other guys in the secondary haven't been any good. I mean, but, you know, I thought they drafted well this year because I know the second-round pick looks good at safety, and they got a fifth-round pick, Hobbs, at cornerback, who looks good. So, you know, they're picking it up a little bit, but they need to because, you know, obviously John Gruden's on a 10-year guaranteed contract at $100 million. Nothing's going to happen to him, but if they don't pick it up this year, Mike Mayock's going to be in trouble, and he's involved for the most part in drafting these players.
John, I've got to give credit to Baker Mayfield. I read a story that he dislocated his left shoulder or separated his left shoulder during the game, and they popped it back in. He comes back out and plays like nothing's wrong, and they end up winning. And now it's the Texans they beat, so not a huge team in the way of an opponent. But, man, that's a tough guy move out there.
Yeah, it really is. And that, I think, is encouraging because now what you're seeing is that, you know, he is tough. And I tell you what, I mean – you have to tough it out this week and week two in the National Football League if you're a quarterback, because look at all the injuries. Mm. As I mentioned, David Carr has his injury. Then you have the rib injury that is affecting Tyrod, or hamstring for Tyrod Taylor. He's going to be out 4 weeks. Nobody knows how long Tua is going to be out with the rib injury. You've got two bad ankles right now for Carson Wentz. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And, you know, we'll see how it sorts out as this week progresses. Then, you know, I mean, they had to take Davis Mills, an undrafted guy down in Houston, to fill in for Tyrod Taylor.
Stanford guy.
Oh, boy, that'll be good.
Well, you just hit on what I was going to ask you about.
Yeah.
We were looking at a little crawl on the TV screen basically saying Deshaun Watson, doesn't really matter whether Tyrod Taylor's available or not, Watson's not going to play.
No, he's not.
So I guess why wouldn't they put him on the – is it up to the league to put him on the commissioner's exempt list, or why would they have him as an active member yet even in an emergency situation like this with Taylor out – they're not going to play the guy.
Well, they're not. I mean, they're not doing an individual suspension, and they're not taking his pay away. And so, you know, obviously they're hoping for a trade, but they're stupid in the standpoint they continue to ask for 3 first-round picks and 2 second-round picks because they're never going to get that. So, you know, again, this is the Texans. I mean, I know that they beat Jacksonville, and Jacksonville now has emerged with the Jets to be, you know, one of the two worst teams in football. And how bad did the Jets play yesterday? Oh, my God. It was awful. But, no, I think that, you know, the Texans are the Texans, and that's why they got themselves in such trouble.
Boy, it doesn't get any easier for the Seahawks. You know, even though the Vikings lost, I guess they missed a field goal at the end. But you look at Dalvin Cook runs for 130 yards. And then Kirk Cousins was like 67%, 68% completion percentage, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Man, that's going to be difficult next week.
Yeah, it is.
But they're 0-2 now, right?
Yeah, they are 0-2. And of course, I mean, you know, and I guess it was interesting because at halftime, you know, what in the Tennessee game, you know, Mike Vrabel says we'll find out who we are in the second half. And, of course, the fact that they came back, they found out who they are is okay. It's pretty good. And now, if you're Mike Zimmer, I mean, your job's on the line. I mean, you're sitting there 0-2, and if you go 0-3, it's not that he's going to get fired at midseason or something like that, but you're in trouble at the end of the year. And, you know, what's amazing is here's this great defensive coach, and I think he's a great defensive coach, but his defense is just getting torn apart. I mean, and that's... You know, it's like, it's wow. I mean, you know, Arizona was able to do a good job against it. And in week one, they certainly struggled. And so now, you know, Seattle can definitely take advantage of it. You know, they've got to tighten some things up, obviously, and they got to do better on the third downs. But, you know, one thing that has happened is that Kirk Cousins seems to have struggled against the better quarterbacks and in primetime games. Now, this isn't a primetime game. It's a 125 game West Coast, so it's 325 in Central. But, no, it's going to be tough, but it's still a winnable game because it seems like every year the Seahawks have to play Minnesota, and they usually come out okay. It's always back and forth. It's like you know, more games seemingly in Seattle than in Minnesota, but now this one is in Minnesota. Yeah.
Hey, John, back to the Seahawks defense for a moment. How much of that are you putting on Ken Norton?
I mean, Ken Norton was great last week. I think that this week it was execution. And again, you know, it's like, I mean, can you put on Ken Norton other than yelling at players? You know, stop making the penalties. Stop getting the, you know, the late hits. Stop doing the taunting. I mean, is that Ken Norton? Is that Pete Carroll? I mean, you know, and it has to be more on the players. But, I mean, you know, and this is where the over-criticism starts to come in. Now, everybody wants to run Trey Flowers out of town on a rail. Now they want to, you know, put the blame on Ken Norton Jr. But, again, say what you want. I mean, this team had Jason Meyer not miss the extra point. And as good as Ken Norton was in being able to stop things and hold them to field goal drives, and particularly stopping teams in the red zone and stopping Tennessee, I thought he did an okay job. Certainly, you know, the run defense fell apart, and the one play certainly by Flowers and missing the tackle, that was bad. But in the end, I think, you know, Ken Norton has put some creative parts in, trying to go some 3 defensive tackle. You know, that seemed to work at times. In the first half, I mean, it took Derrick Henry and held him to 35 yards. Is that bad on Ken Norton's part? It was just in the second half, things seemed to fall apart.
Yeah, I guess it just seems like if you're in charge, though, then that's typically on you, and most coaches will tell you that. But, yeah, I mean, it just – I thought also, you know, as far as – Bob and I were just looking at that play on the – it looked like Jamal Adams is blitzing, and I don't think he has that kind of freedom to just do whatever, you know, he wants to do. So, and that's what some people were asking. But I thought also, like, the entire D-line just got – totally washed down.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, yeah, I mean, it's always like a team loss. The taunting thing, John, I was thinking, you know, earlier DJ Reed, I think he defended AJ Brown and effectively, you know, knocked the pass down or whatever, had coverage. He did the same thing, except he was just, you know, turned towards the crowd.
Right.
And I don't know, man. It's just, that is such a picky penalty to me. It's like, oh, you hurt the guy's feelings. You know,
so
I mean,
dumb.
This is the NFL. These are grown men. I mean, I feel like there's going to be some kind of a directive for the officials going forward. That, hey, let's ease up off of these taunting.
It's ridiculous. I mean, and again, it's like you're not there to go to a football game or watch a football game to see the officials throw flags.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, for nonviolent acts and things of that nature, do we really need to see that? I mean, you know, I mean, I didn't see anything DJ did other than make a turn and, you know, pump his hand a little bit with a little bit of a celebration. But how much of that was DJ thanking himself for making a good play, and how much it was on the wide receiver? I mean, it's like, come on, what are we doing?
You're trying to take the emotion out of the game. They want robots out
yeah,
there. No
yeah.
emotion. No, don't be animated. Don't celebrate. It's just, it's so dumb. It is so dumb. And the funny part about that is he didn't make a great play.
No.
The ball bounced off A.J. Brown's hands. It wasn't because DJ Reed did anything. He got lucky on that. So, you know, but just the penalty was bad. And then the officials in this game, you know, if we're being honest, John, the Seahawks caught two very big breaks. One is the Julio Jones touchdown in the back of the end zone. We have still frame pictures that show, I mean, that's a touchdown. That's a touchdown if you're being honest. And then the safety – it should have been a safety, and they said, well, Russell's down on the 1 yard line. His momentum was stopped, or whatever the heck they said there. That was a safety.
Yeah.
I just, the officiating yesterday was really, really odd.
No, I would agree.
And you can't say the Seahawks got screwed because
no.
Those were
no.
two that were pretty bad.
I thought it was interesting going back to Jamal Adams. Did you hear what Pete Carroll was saying today? Is that they're working with him right now to kind of calm down his aggressiveness. You know, because whether it's going to be on a blitz, whether it's going to be on a tackle, whether it's going to be a hit on a quarterback, they're trying to control that a little bit more, because I think that what they're looking at, and particularly with the penalty and everything else, that he's probably trying to do too much. And obviously, you know, you can see that he's not going to blitz as much as he did last year, although maybe blitzing in the game on Sunday would have been a better idea. But I think that, I mean, you can see that what Pete's saying is that they're trying to control that a little bit more. Because, you know, say what you want, I know he's a three-time Pro Bowl player. He's the highest paid safety in football, and I think he's a great player. I mean, I could see a Hall of Fame career coming from him, but he's still a work in progress. I mean, again, you know, he comes off the you know, the New York Jet team. Now, again, he had a good coach in Greg Williams, but also, I mean, this is a Jet team. It just was terrible. And so it's like, you know, he still has work to do.
Hey, yeah, you mentioned the Jets. We talked about that earlier and what a disaster that was. Four interceptions for Zach Wilson.
Oh, I know.
Oof. Yeah, I mean, is of the young guys, who's maybe played the worst, do you think?
Oh, there's no doubt it's Zach Wilson.
Zach, yeah.
I mean, you know, Trevor Lawrence, no doubt, has struggled. I mean, what, he had two picks yesterday. I think it was sacked three times, and he didn't complete 50% of his passes. But Mac Jones did a good job because they were able to dominate the Miami Dolphins. Now, he didn't get the ball downfield enough, but he did. And then, you know, it was – and here's the predictable thing on Justin Fields. Now, Fields had to replace Andy Dalton when Dalton had the knee injury, but you can see he's going to hold on to the ball too much. And with that offensive line, that's going to be dangerous for him. And, you know, where I'm getting to be worried, you know, when you have the four or five quarterback injuries like we watched yesterday, how many more are going to happen? And how's that going to change the game?
Yeah.
Hey, John, quickly, a couple of people texting and asking about Richard Sherman. We saw the reports that the Tampa Bay Bucks have some interest in him. It would seem a good spot for him. He's going to go to a great team, a team defending Super Bowl champs, if he were to go there. And also, I haven't heard about any other team showing interest in him.
No, there's, I mean, you've got, you know, Sean Murphy Bunting, I mean, he's on the injured reserve list, so they have an opening for a cornerback there. You know, New Orleans is desperate for a cornerback, and they've inquired, because remember, it's like not only did they lose Jackrabbit to the Tennessee Titans, but I mean, you saw the two cornerback changes that they made, and you know, they've got problems down there. And then Marcus Lattimore, with a thumb surgery, he had to go on injured reserve. So they're looking at him. San Francisco's looking at him because you know that Jason Verrett is on injured reserve. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've missed Emmanuel Mosley for the first 2 weeks, although he should be back this week. So and then Seattle, I don't know where they stand on him. But
Pete said they haven't inquired.
Yeah. So they have not inquired.
No.
Yeah. So it's like, and you can see that he's working out. He's trying to straighten out his life, but there's definite interest in him.
Where does he land?
I don't know. I mean, right now, I guess, if he wants to be on a winner, it would be Tampa Bay. But then the problem is, what are they going to pay him? I mean, because again, they don't have a lot of cap room, and I don't know if Richard is going to play for the discount. I mean, we saw that KJ Wright waited things out, and he didn't. I mean, he had to do it at $3.25 million, and I don't know if Richard will play for that low of an amount of money. But I don't know. There's no way that I think the Bucks can pay $3.25 million.
John, we appreciate it. We will talk again tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up, Seahawks pre- and post-game host Michael Bumpus will join us to break down the game and everything that went on. That's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome in, everybody. It's what we do every week here. We talk to the man behind the mic. You hear him on the pregame, the halftime, and the postgame show of your Seahawks broadcast, and he joins us every single week on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. He is Michael Bumpus. Bump, how are you, man?
I'm doing all right, you know, with all things considered. Seahawks, tough weekend. But other than that, I'm all right. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, we're trying to make sense of it all. You know, it's in the grand scheme of things, it's 1 of 17. So it's you know, you don't want to get over the top about it. But it's a game you felt like you probably should have won. You were at home and things took a really, really bad turn in the second half. So I always like to slice up the blame pie, if you will. Who gets the biggest slice of blame pie in this one, in your opinion?
Who gets the biggest slice? That's a tough question to answer because you feel like both sides of the ball play well at times, right? 24-9 going into half. Tyler Lockett looks great. Chris Carson is running the football. He's got a couple touchdowns. The defense looks solid. And then the second half comes around, and Derrick Henry just does his thing, man. A big run, 60-yard touchdown. The defense ends up giving over 500 yards of offense. So I know this is the easy way out, Bob, but that was a team loss, man. I mean, there were times where Russell Wilson could have, you know, put the team in better position, especially in overtime. You know, there were times where they could have kept contained on Henry. You know, there were also times where, you know, I feel like the tight end should have got involved. So, they all got to take this one on the chin, from the players to the coaches. They just couldn't get on the same page consistently for a very long time.
Hey, so I thought for the first time, and maybe I was a little bit premature on this, I said Russ doesn't look panicked. He doesn't look desperate. It doesn't look like it doesn't make sense to him. He looked kind of confused, especially on that last offensive drive. He ends up getting sacked, but two passes where it just was way off target, and it looked like he thought that something else was going on there. What did you see there?
Man, Dave, I think Russ fell in love with going downfield. If you watch that back shoulder throw he tried to get to Tyler Lockett, you had Chris Carson open underneath. I think he wanted to win the game right now instead of just treating an overtime like essentially what it is, a fifth quarter, and you don't have to win it all in one play. I think when you have success early throwing the ball down the field to Tyler Lockett, naturally your human instinct is going to say, look, I'm going to look for my guy again. And I think he didn't process exactly what was going down. Man, he was maybe 6 inches off of connecting with Tyler Lockett on that sideline there, but Chris Carson's open underneath. So I think that he didn't take what the defense was giving him. He was trying to take what they gave him early in the game.
Yeah, I'll go back to what we opened with, and I agree with you. I think it was a team fail. I think everybody's complicit. Everybody's complicit, Dave. You know how that goes. But if I were going to lean one way and give the biggest slice, I would give it to the defense because you saw it in the first half, Bump. I felt like there was a lot of luck going on there that, you know, some drop balls by the Tennessee Titans receivers, yeah. Some really unfortunate penalties at best. If I was a Titans fan, I would have been really upset about some of the calls that were made, the touchdown that was not called a touchdown in the end zone. So it felt like the defense was sort of living by the skin of their teeth. You look at the time of possession even in the first half, and the Seahawks got it handed to them in time of possession. Second half, everybody looked at the offense falling flat, which it absolutely did, but then said, well, that's why the defense was tired. I'm like, well, the defense started the game out that way. Pretty much from the opening drive, after the opening drive, they couldn't really get off the field. They held it to field goals, but it felt like they were sort of fortunate with some of the things that happened. So defensively, I was a little more bothered by what I saw from them or didn't see from them as opposed to the offense.
Yeah, those are some great points. A.J. Brown dropped a couple easy ones. Julio Jones didn't get one in the end zone. And I think the defense, one, they got lucky, and two, they fell in love with kind of not being not having gap integrity is what you call it. And you listen to Bobby Wagner and Pete Carroll and Jamal Adams talk about it. They have success stopping Derrick Henry in the backfield. So then you start to take the bait. You're like, look, man, I know I got outside contained here, but I'm going to gamble. I'm going to go inside. And you make a play. So just like Russell was getting used to going downfield, or the defense is like, all right, man, I got away with one. Let me try it again. And with a runner like Henry, man, you watch the film. If he gets outside, it is a wrap. As soon as he got outside, I saw him one-on-one with Trey Flowers and no safety help over the top, Diggs trying to hustle over there. I knew that it was over. So, yes, the defense made their mistakes. They got lucky early, and they kept rolling the dice and gambling when it comes to assignments. And eventually, a runner like Derrick Henry, he's going to find the crease and he's going to get his. So, I mean, I understand how you could lean towards the defense. They definitely got away with a lot. But I just look at the play calling as well. You know, and I'm not getting on Shane Waldron. Okay, I'm not saying, oh, my God, what was he thinking? You need to start all over. This is week two. This is second time calling games and in the regular season. He's got some things he's got to figure out, too. I talked to Ray Roberts earlier. And he made a great point. He goes, Bob, man, we saw the jet sweep late. They weren't shifting. They didn't get tight ends involved. And as a play caller, you can almost out-coach yourself because you're like, they're expecting us to do this, but I'm going to do this. I'm not going to do what they expect us to do. When sometimes you just need to line it up and say, all right, you know what we're going to do. You know the down and distance. Just beat us. So I think he's got some things to work out, too.
Yeah, I didn't see one fly sweep, I don't think. And I think
two targets to Gerald Everett, none to Disley.
Disley, none, yeah. So they kind of got away. Hey, what about DK Metcalf, man? Does he need to calm down a little bit? I mean, you know, he could have got – it was a hold out there on the edge, but then he could have possibly gotten, like, a personal foul as well. What do you think's going on with him? Because, you know, and I felt like Pete was maybe going to talk to him, and it didn't look like he did, and then – DK, I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into what he's doing on the sidelines, but I'm wondering if he's kind of, you know, kind of taking himself out of his game.
Yeah, well, DK, part of his game is just being able to get under other people's skin, yeah. Right, and imposing his physical on another guy. That's why he had two holding penalties on screenplays where they're trying to get outside of him, and he's trying to do his best. He's trying to block, but there's a point where you just have to let go. So there's two penalties there, and then I believe he had like a personal foul for talking or something last week, and it kind of bowled over to this week. DK has to realize guys are going to get at him. When you're the biggest bully on the block, you're going to get these DBs chirping at you, trying to get you to make those mental errors. So I think he just has to find where the line is, because you don't want to take that away from DK. That's part of what makes him special, that he fears nobody. He's going to block you. He's going to go hard. But with these new rules and these referees just looking to throw a flag, which is ridiculous, he's got to be careful, because they have league meetings. They have referees meet before the game. And I guarantee you they're like, all right, guys, we got to look at number 14. He's really physical. He likes to talk. So the sooner he realizes that, you have to be yourself, because that's what makes you special, but you also have to realize these referees and these players, they're looking to get you in trouble.
Hey, what's your take on the pass rush? I was talking to Dave saying, man, I thought boy, I thought maybe they were just going to have a day out there because Taylor Lewan gets hurt in warmups. He's not out there playing. Roger Saffold was dealing with a bad shoulder. He was in and out. So you had backups on the left side of that line. I'm thinking, okay, this could be a great day for them to feast. And I'm looking at the box score, and I'm trying to remember, was Carlos Dunlap out there? Was Rasheem Green out there? Was Benson Mayoa? I didn't hear any of these guys' names called. You know, I know Alton Robinson had a sack late in the game. Bobby had his, and Al Woods had his. But for the most part, Tannehill was safe as a little lamb back there. He was sacked three times and just picked apart that secondary. It was an interesting day considering that it looked like they had the advantage.
Yeah, with the injuries and especially going off of last week, the performance that the Hawks had, and then you look at what the Arizona Cardinals did to the Titans, you're thinking that, okay, they're going to get in the backfield and they're going to make things happen. Thing with the Titans is that they play in such tight formations that you're going to have a tight end that's going to help out on the edge, then release to the flat. I think Tannehill did a good job getting the ball out of his hands, especially late in the game, to his checkdowns, his running backs in the middle of the field. It's almost like he did a good job getting the ball out of his hands before the pass rush could really get to you. And then let's remember, I mean, we got young guys. We're excited about these young guys, right? Rasheem Green, Darryl Taylor. Okay, let's see if they can back it up week to week. But they are still young, so it's going to take them a while to really find how to be consistent. But, you know, Tannehill was still hit eight times. He was still sacked three times. So they got to him. We just didn't see the huge plays consistently or to the level that the Arizona Cardinals did last week. I think without that Arizona Cardinals game, maybe our expectations are down just a bit. But when you see what Chandler Jones did, you expect that to happen for the Hawks. But we don't have a Chandler Jones, and we're hoping to develop one here soon.
Bump, always good to talk to you, my friend. We'll do it again next week.
All right, guys, take care.
There you go. There's Michael Bumpus with us each and every week. We appreciate his time. Coming up, the Cardinals won on Sunday, despite the best attempts of somebody from the Vikings. We'll tell you what we're talking about when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial. Every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
There are plenty of great moments around the NFL yesterday, and I kind of hesitate. I'm not trying to make fun of this guy, because I assume it's just a noteworthy call here, but I assume the Vikings radio crew was not traveling, like, you know, you guys didn't week one, Dave, and it's got to be tough with Confl Monitor, but
you're not supposed to say that.
Oh,
Mike.
Sorry.
No, I'm kidding.
We're ruining things that are live again, like no, you fine. Do with the interviews.
Like, see, you're getting me back.
Yes, there you
ruining
go.
Ruining things like you do, Dave.
Dave was most certainly in Indianapolis. This is a, you know, last second field goal, chip shot field goal for the Vikings, called good by their radio crew.
High snap, put down. Joseph, come on! It is good! No, he missed it.
Good.
Are you kidding me? He missed it right.
He missed it right.
Oh, my heavens. Oh, my. He missed it right. What a gut punch to a team. Paul, that play after play toward the end fought its way back. Oh. Missed it by like a foot, and just, oh my God.
How many people are in the booth? Is it two or three?
Well, there's a color guy and an analyst. I mean, there's a play-by-play guy and an analyst.
Because the way he went from his yelling voice right into, he missed it. It was good! He missed it.
Yeah, maybe it was the engineer.
But yeah,
you got
a lot of people in the booth.
Maybe there was like three or four people. Like, well, the thing is, also, you don't have the all 22 now, so you can't see. I think there's an end zone shot, so you could see it pretty clearly from what I remember last year. You don't have any of that. I would have just held off a little bit there.
Well, he was right in mid-call. It's good! He missed it. It was an abrupt left turn there. That's,
I always remember the broadcaster's name there.
Paul Allen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's
good guy. We've had him on before.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And I feel bad for him, because can you imagine, like, the fans listening? They're like, what? You betrayed me. You should have just called it good.
Yeah, if you're at home and you heard that, just, boy, he just took you all the way up and all the way down in a split second.
Wouldn't that be great if he, like, you know, it's like a War of the World,
pretended
War of the Worlds type of broadcast where, yeah, you just call it good and
create
act like
reality.
They won. Yeah.
I don't care what the scoreboard says. That was good. They win.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, this guy's quickly becoming, I think, my favorite NFL player. Current Lions running back Jamal Williams and former Packer Jamal Williams. has a terrific personality, and he had a number of pretty unique quotes about what it's going to be like to face the Packers tonight.
They didn't want me like that ex-girlfriend. Shoot, I got to go. But, you know, gladly I got a rebound. It was the Lions. They picked me up. You know what I mean? Now they feeding me good, taking me to dinners. You know what I mean? Another man's treasure is another man's treasure. So, but I'm just having fun, man. It's part of life. You know, you're going to have those type of rejections. You're going to get turned down. You're going to get, you know, people ain't going to want you. But when you get your shot and opportunity again from somebody who will give you your shot, you know, you just got to take that opportunity, be grateful for it, and make it count.
That's funny. I like his delivery. Feed me good. Dude, it's funny.
That's hilarious. That guy.
The clip is almost better, yeah, seeing his facial expressions and the way he sold it.
Yeah.
So he really is a great interview.
Who knew?
He rebounded. Feed me good.
Makes it sound like a relationship.
Oh, that is funny.
Oh, man.
Now I'm pulling for the Lions and your guy Jared Goff.
Yeah.
Clayton says the game shouldn't even be played.
Yeah, they already lost.
I guess despite what Clayton said, they're still going to play the game? Are they going to go through with it?
Well, that's bold because you know what the Packers did last week, all of 3 points.
They gacked. Yeah, they were horrific.
Yeah, I don't mind. Actually, I don't have any problem with Jared Goff. I do make fun of
Dave.
Him. I like him. He seems like a nice guy.
Do you really?
Seems like a nice guy.
I feel like you root against
okay,
him.
Okay, I like being right. So I think that he's not very good. I was right about Josh Rosen so far anyway.
Yeah, Rosen was.
But I don't know. I'm okay with him just because he seems like a nice enough guy. Also, the fact that he played in that game. In the playoff game last year and beat
minus
the Seahawks without a thumb.
Yeah.
That definitely
gave you some
went up a couple of notches.
Some toughness, credibility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, the Colts just keep having issues with Carson Wentz. He suffered an ankle injury yesterday against the Rams. Jacob Eason came in, so the UW guy got some run against the Rams. And here's Frank Reich trying to maybe explain what's going on with Carson Wentz and if they know when they'll get him back.
He rolled it up pretty bad. I kind of had a sense when he walked off the field because I saw it. It didn't look good. Sometimes if you go back in right away while it's still warm, you know, you can maybe gut out a few more plays. But, you know, when the longer we were off the field there, it just stiffened up. And, you know, he tried, but there was no chance.
Yeah, you and I talked about this during the break. Carson Wentz, I'll give him, yeah, he's certainly had injury issues. I don't look at him as soft, though. You look at the hits he took in the Seahawks game. You look at how he got hurt in that game, the injury they're talking about. These aren't just, he ran and twisted an ankle or he barely got touched and now he's limping all of, you know, Ben Roethlisberger. When he takes some big hits and he got twisted up pretty good there. I'm not going to look at him as soft. He's unlucky. Maybe he is fragile, but boy, he's earning it when he gets hurt.
He's still part of one of the weirdest injuries I've ever seen, and it's when Jadeveon Clowney hit him.
Oh, in the head?
Head, and then he gets up, goes into the huddle, calls the huddle, makes adjustments, goes up to the line, says, you know, something to the, you know, about the snap count. He's counting everything, and then, like, two plays later, all of a sudden he's dizzy and so it was like a delayed concussion, because typically it happens right away, and you're just like, where am I? I have no idea what.
Well, it's like you said you played the best game you ever played when you were concussed.
Yeah,
you had to be making calls, right?
No, I told the other linebacker to call him.
Oh, you didn't make any calls?
I just ran around and made plays.
All I did was look at the ball and went after it.
Yeah, it was our other linebacker, Barry McKeever.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, Barry, you got to call the huddle. It's like, why? Just do it.
Oh, you didn't tell him?
I didn't want anybody to know I had a concussion.
Did you know in the moment you had a concussion, or were you just like, man, I can't clear my head? Or
I was looking at the sidelines, and they're giving me the signals, and I'm like, yeah, nothing.
I don't know what that means.
I got nothing.
I don't know what you're doing.
Exactly.
Oh, all right. Coming up, Seahawks center Kyle Fuller will be in our Seahawks spotlight, and he'll explain how the team bounces back from a game like this. That's coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.